Conrad heard someone groaning and gradually became aware that it was him. He was adrift in a deep black sea, the waves jolting him back and forth. After what seemed like an eternity, he realized that the waves were actually the pulsing of blood in his head. He was alive. That knowledge brought strength and determination with it, but they seeped slowly into his body and brain. Finally, he tried to move his arms, but they were pulled behind him in an awkward position and wouldn't budge. Someone had tied him up, and the uncomfortable, soggy lump in his mouth was a gag of some sort. He moved his head and felt his chin scrape against something rough. He knew that he was lying on the rug in front of his desk. Then it all came flooding back to him. Sinclair. That bastard. Sinclair had to be the one who had hit him and knocked him out. Conrad wasn't sure why, but he was certain it had been Sinclair. In that instant, before everything had fallen in on him, he had realized that the writing on the telegraph form was his secretary's. Sinclair had printed the message in an attempt to disguise his hand, but it hadn't worked. Conrad had recognized those decisive strokes. So the telegram was a lie. Kirkson wasn't going to change everything at the steel manufacturing plant. Sinclair had dreamed up the whole thing so he'd have an excuse to get into Conrad's house. But why?
Rero!
The answer shot through Conrad's veins like a jolt of that newfangled electric current. And like that electric current, it galvanized his muscles into action. Conrad lurched up onto his knees, ignoring the fresh pain that pounded in his skull like the sound of distant drums and the agony in his shoulders. He leaned against the desk to brace himself. He shoved with his legs until he was on his feet. He had to free himself and get to Rebel. Easier said than done. The room spun crazily around him as he turned his back to the desk. His hands had gone numb enough that he could barely feel them as he fumbled around for the letter opener he knew was on the desk. At last he found it. Conrad struggled to turn the blade so that he could use it to saw through the cord binding his wrists. Luckily, the cord wasn't very thick and parted within a few minutes. Even so, those minutes seemed like an eternity to Conrad, because all he could think of was that something terrible might be happening to Rebel. When his wrists were free, he pulled his hands in front of him again and took a moment to massage some feeling back into them. Then he ripped the gag out of his mouth and took a step toward the door. He reeled and would have fallen if he hadn't managed to grab the back of the chair where Sinclair had been sitting earlier. Conrad waited a few seconds. No matter what was going on, no matter what danger threatened, he couldn't do Rebel any good if he passed out again. He had to stay awake and on his feet. Even though he stumbled a little, his stride was stronger when he started for the door again. He stepped out into the hall.
Rebel? Rebel, where are you?
No answer. In this case, maybe the worst answer of all. She had said she was going upstairs. Conrad wasn't sure he could manage stairs just yet. If he took a tumble down them, he might break a leg or hit his head and knock himself out again.
The rear stairs.
They were narrower than the main staircase. He could press a hand against each wall and brace himself. He staggered toward the kitchen. As soon as Conrad shoved the door open and stepped into the room, he recognized the smell in the air. He had seen enough gruesome death to know what freshly spilled blood smelled like. He stopped in his tracks and stared down stupidly at the figure lying on the floor in front of him. It was Edwin Sinclair, Conrad realized. The secretary lay face down. A large pool of reddish-black blood had formed around his head and was slowly soaking into the hardwood floor. Several large crimson stains marred the back of his suit coat. In the middle of one of those stains, the handle and part of the blade of a knife protruded from Sinclair's body. And pinned to the corpse with that knife was a piece of paper. Conrad lurched forward. He saw his name written on the paper and knew it was meant for him. He dropped to his knees beside Sinclair and reached for the knife. He wrapped his fingers around the handle and pulled it free. Conrad's attention was solely focused on the words crudely printed on the paper.
We have your wife. Do what we say, or we'll kill her. You'll hear from us.
Rebel was gone, taken from their house by strangers, intruders who had killed the secretary.
Am I wrong about you, Sinclair?
Good Lord! Put that knife down, mister. I've got you covered.
Numbly, Conrad looked around. Carson City had an actual police force now, not just a local marshal and deputies, as befitted the capital city of the whole state. Two uniformed officers stood just inside the kitchen, revolvers in their hands. They pointed the guns at Conrad, and he realized that he was still holding the knife. Not only that, but he was kneeling beside the bloody corpse of his own secretary.
This isn't what it looks like.
What is it then? It looks to me like you stabbed that poor son of a gun.
Conrad held the paper out so that the man could read it for himself. Suddenly, he was too tired to explain. Too tired, and too filled with fear for his wife. The presence of the note made it clear that Conrad hadn't killed Edwin Sinclair. The chief of Carson City's police force admitted that as he sat in Conrad's study an hour later.
Your secretary must have tried to fight off the kidnappers. He paid for it with his life, but at least he tried.
Conrad rubbed his temples as he sat behind the desk. The dull, throbbing ache in his head hadn't gone away, but it wasn't as bad as the ache in his heart.
I misjudged poor Sinclair. Tell the truth, I wasn't sure I trusted the man. In business, yes, but not that much around my wife.
You shouldn't say things like that, Mr. Browning. Some folks might figure that was a motive for murder. Of course, in this case, we know the kidnappers are to blame for Sinclair's death.
Chief, do you have any experience with things like this?
Well, no, sir, I don't. This is the first kidnapping I remember ever taking place in these parts. But I've heard about such things, and I reckon it's only a matter of time before you hear from those varmints again. They'll have to tell you how much money they want and where and how you're supposed to deliver it.
Do you think they'll want me to bring the money in person?
That wouldn't surprise me. They'll figure you'd be less likely to try some sort of trick that way. You are going to pay?
Of course. I'd pay any amount of money to get my wife back safely.
But that didn't mean he was going to let those bastards get away with what they had done, he thought. They had to pay for taking Edwin Sinclair's life, and for the ordeal they were putting Rebel through. Conrad wouldn't let himself think about what might be happening to her. Rebel was strong and smart. She would do whatever she needed to do in order to live through this. For the moment, her survival was all that mattered. Vengeance would come later. Even though he was willing to wait, Conrad had taken the first step toward settling the score with the kidnappers. He had written out a wire and prevailed on one of the police officers to take it to the Western Union office. The urgent message was addressed to Claudius Turnbuckle in San Francisco, a partner in one of the law firms that represented the Browning interests. The last time Conrad had seen his father, Frank Morgan had been on his way to Los Angeles to lend a hand to Turnbuckle's partner, John J. Stafford. Conrad didn't know if that affair had already been settled, but Turnbuckle would. The lawyer might at least have an idea of how to get in touch with Frank. Because Conrad didn't mind admitting that he needed his father's help again.
We'll do everything we can to help, but our job is really keeping the peace here in town. You might want to give some thought to hiring the Pinkertons, or some outfit like that, if you want to track down the men who did this.
I know someone who can find them.
Oh, yeah. You're probably right about that.
The problem was that it might take days to locate Frank, and even longer for him to get here. Conrad didn't think the kidnappers would wait that long to make their demands. They would move quickly, in hopes of getting their hands on the ransom and making their getaway before anyone had a chance to corral them. He would probably have to handle that part himself, without Frank's help. The chief put his hands on his knees and pushed himself to his feet.
If there's anything I can do for you, Mr. Browning, don't hesitate to let me know. In the meantime, I don't reckon there's much any of us can do except wait. Maybe you should try to get some rest.
Yes, of course. Thank you, Chief.
With that, the chief left, and he was alone. He had never been alone in this house, he realized. Rebel had always been with him. Conrad felt a sharp pang of loss as that sunk in on him. Staying busy would help, he thought, A cabinet on one side of the room held several Winchesters, a double-barreled shotgun, a long-range European sporting rifle, and a half a dozen Colt revolvers. Checking and cleaning all those weapons would take time. Conrad wanted to be sure he had plenty of ammunition on hand for all of them, too. There was no telling how many guns he might need before this was over. By morning, Conrad still hadn't slept. The ache in his head had faded some, but was still there. He went into the kitchen to make some coffee, but stopped short when he saw the large, dark stain on the floor. The Undertaker's men had cleaned up the blood as best they could when they came to collect Edwin Sinclair's body, but nothing would get rid of that stain. The floor would have to be replaced. Once Rebel was back, the two of them could go on that trip to the high country, Conrad thought. And while they were gone, someone could come in here and do the work on the house that needed to be done to cleanse it of every reminder of what had happened. A knock on the door as he stood there contemplating the bloodstain made him jerk around. His long legs carried him quickly to the door. He had to force himself not to run. When he opened the door, he found a boy about 12 years old standing on the porch. He looked like a typical frontier youngster in boots and overalls and with a round-brimmed hat.
Are you Mr. Browning?
That's right.
An hombre told me to give this to you.
The boy held out a folded piece of paper.
He said you'd give me a nickel.
Conrad took the paper. When he unfolded it, he saw that the words on it were printed in the same crude block letters as the message that had been left for him the night before. He recognized that before the actual meaning of the words sunk in on him. Bring 50 grand to Black Rock Canyon tonight, midnight. Come alone. Conrad's heart pounded hard in his chest. $50,000 was an incredible amount of money. Most men wouldn't earn that much in a lifetime. He had it, though, and he didn't mind spending it if that would ensure Rebel's safe return. Unfortunately, there were no guarantees that the kidnappers would keep their word.
How about that nickel, mister?
Conrad reached in his pocket and brought out a double eagle. The boy's eyes widened at the sight of it.
I'll do better than that. This is yours if you can give me a good description of the man who gave you the message for me.
Sure. Well, he was older than you and sort of skinny. He had a reddish-colored beard that sort of poked out from his chin.
How was he dressed?
Well, shoot, I never paid much attention to that. Well, like a cowboy, I'd say. I know he had on boots and an old Stetson.
Anything else you can tell me about him?
Not really. He was just a fella.
Was anybody with him?
Nope, he was by himself. I know that.
Where did you see him?
The boy turned and pointed toward the road that led northwest out of Carson City.
He was up yonder, about half a mile, I reckon. He was just sitting on his horse in some trees when I walked by, and he called me over. He asked me if I knew you or where you lived. When I said I didn't, he told me how to find your house and gave me the paper.
What about his horse?
It was a big chestnut gelding.
Conrad's heart had started to beat faster as the boy described the man who had given him the note. The description of the horse was the last bit of evidence Conrad needed. He remembered both man and horse from the encounter on the hillside overlooking the city several days earlier. He had no doubt that the kidnappers were the men who had interrupted the picnic he and Rebel had been enjoying, which meant that the encounter probably wasn't a coincidence. Those men had been following them, probably plotting their crime even then. Conrad suspected that they had wanted to get a good look at him and Rebel. They must have decided it would be easy to steal her away from him, he thought bitterly.
Mister?
Conrad looked down at the boy and forced a solemn smile onto his face. He held out the double eagle.
Here. You've earned this.
The youngster snatched the coin and bit it to make sure it was real, obviously a habit with him.
Thanks, mister.
He started to run away, then stopped and looked back at Conrad.
That note I brought you, was it bad news?
I don't know yet.
He wouldn't know until midnight tonight. Despite the vow he had made to himself earlier about not resting until Rebel was safe again, Conrad knew he couldn't afford to be groggy tonight from lack of sleep. He would need to be alert, with all his senses functioning at top efficiency. For that reason, he went upstairs and forced himself to lie down on the bed in the guest room. He couldn't bring himself to stretch out by himself on the bed he normally shared with Rebel. Exhaustion overwhelmed him, and he fell asleep with surprising ease, even though he hadn't taken off his clothes. His dreams were haunted, though, by nightmares in which shadowy, faceless, evil figures were chasing Rebel through a dark, seemingly endless forest. More than once he jolted awake, only to fall back almost right away into a stupor that turned into yet another of the horrible dreams. It was the middle of the day when he woke up and stayed awake. As he stumbled down the stairs, he spotted a Western Union envelope on the floor just inside the front door. He had sent instructions with the message to Claudius Turnbuckle that Western Union was to bring any reply to him right away, no matter what time it was, day or night. He supposed he had been sleeping so soundly that he hadn't heard the messenger knocking on the front door. Conrad practically pounced on the telegram. He tore open the envelope and pulled out a yellow flimsy, like the one Sinclair had brought to the house the previous night.
Morgan's whereabouts unknown at present. Will attempt to locate with all urgency. Anything else I can do to help? Turnbuckle.
Conrad suppressed the urge to crumple the telegram in his hand. That wouldn't do any good. He couldn't help but be disappointed, though. He had hoped that Frank was somewhere close by. It looked like Conrad couldn't count on his father's help with this problem. Fifteen minutes later, Conrad had cleaned himself up a little. He changed his clothes and shaved. He was at the bank now, and he didn't want to look like he had slept in his clothes, which of course he had. Conrad did business with the bank in the same building where his downtown office was located. This time he carried a good-sized carpet bag with him. A clerk had ushered him into the bank manager's office without delay.
Oh, what can I do for you, Mr. Browning?
I need $50,000.
The manager prided himself on being unflappable, but even he gaped at that unexpected statement. For a moment he couldn't speak.
But that's a great deal of money, Mr. Browning.
I know that. I need it anyway.
But why?
No offense, but that's not really any of your business, is it?
Oh, actually, it is. I have a responsibility to the depositors to protect their money. You don't have $50,000 in this bank, sir, so I'd be giving you other people's money.
You know perfectly well I'm good for it. You can wire my banks in Boston and Denver and San Francisco if you don't believe me.
Oh, I believe you. It's just that there are procedures we normally follow.
I don't have time for normal procedures.
Conrad placed the carpet bag on the manager's desk.
When I leave here, I need to have $50,000 in this bag.
You sound almost like a hold-up man, Mr. Browning.
If that's what it takes.
No, of course not. You're well known to be a man of sterling reputation. Of course you're good for the money. It won't be necessary to wire any of your other banks.
He went to the door of his office.
Joseph! Come over here! Joseph, I want you to begin putting together a package of cash for Mr. Browning. $50,000. And be discreet about it.
Did you say...
You heard what I said. Hop, do it!
Yes, sir.
The manager closed the door again and turned back to Conrad.
We're more than happy to help you with this, but if there's anything else I can do, I mean, if you're in some sort of trouble...
What makes you think that?
Whenever someone needs a great deal of money in a hurry, there's always some sort of trouble.
The chief of police had promised to keep the news of Rebel's kidnapping quiet. Obviously, he had kept his word. If the story had leaked out, the bank manager would have heard about it by now.
I appreciate your concern, but this is something I have to handle myself. I can promise you, I won't forget about how you're cooperating with me.
We'll do anything we can to help, Mr. Browning. You know that.
A short time later, the clerk came back to the office carrying a box that contained bundles of $20 and $50 bills. He placed it on the manager's desk.
Will there be anything else, sir?
The manager looked at Conrad, who shook his head. When the clerk was gone, Conrad and the manager both counted the money to be sure the amount was correct. Then Conrad placed the bills in the carpet bag. The bag was fairly heavy when he finished. He signed a receipt for the money.
I'm sure that I can count on your discretion.
Of course! No one will hear about this from me.
I'll replace these funds, one way or another, within 48 hours.
If the ransom payoff went off without a hitch and he got Rebel back safely, he would have $50,000 sent to the Carson City Bank from one of his other banks. If it didn't... Conrad wouldn't allow himself to think about that.
Surely you'd like one of our guards to come with you, Mr. Browning. That's a great deal of money to be carrying around with you.
I'm aware of that.
Conrad pulled back his coat so that the manager could see the butts of the Colt 45s tucked behind his belt on each hip.
That's why I'm taking precautions of my own.
The manager didn't say anything to that. He just stared at the man in his office as if he had never seen Conrad before. And it was true. He had never seen this Conrad Browning. This Conrad Browning had appeared only a few times in the past, when faced with danger to himself or someone he loved. This Conrad Browning was his father's son. Conrad carried the carpet bag with him when he stopped at a clothing store on his way home. He came out half an hour later with a paper-wrapped bundle under his other arm. One more stop at a local gunsmith's shop, and then he went back to his house to continue getting ready for that night. Black Rock Canyon was northwest of the city, well off the road to Reno, and not far from Lake Tahoe. Conrad had been there once, when he was investigating some land he was thinking about buying, just over the state line in California. One trail led through the canyon, which was steep-sided and covered with pines. No one lived there. It was dark and desolate, and above it loomed a huge bluff that gave the place its name. An appropriate lair for the sort of evil bastards who would abduct a man's wife. When he had awoken from his troubled sleep earlier in the day, the beginnings of a plan had been in the back of his mind. First and foremost was rebel safety, of course. But once that was assured, he planned to go after the men who had taken her, with all the forces at his command. Also, he knew better than to assume that the gang would return her, even if he paid the ransom. The chances that they would try to pull a double cross were high. If that happened, Conrad was going to be ready for them, or at least he was going to try to be. He would have felt a lot better about his chances if he'd had his father siding him. But he had known for years that he wouldn't always have Frank Morgan to help him. The time had come for him to grow up and handle his own problems. Stomp his own snakes, as Frank would put it. He opened the bundle he had brought from the clothing store and laid out his purchases on the bed in the spare room. He had bought a pair of black whipcord trousers and a black bib-front shirt, as well as a flat-crowned black Stetson. He already owned a pair of black high-topped boots. At the gunsmith's shop, he had picked up a holster and cartridge belt of fine black leather. If it was necessary, he wanted to be able to blend into the shadows. The black outfit would make that easier. He planned to wear it underneath his regular clothes. The gun belt would be in the buggy, along with a Winchester and his shotgun. The kidnappers would be expecting a scared, inexperienced Easterner. That was what Conrad would give them, up to a point. But if they went back on the deal, or if Rebel was hurt in any way, then the man they would have to deal with would be someone else entirely. Laswell was beginning to wonder if the payoff would be worth it. He'd hardly had a moment's peace since they'd snatched that crazy bitch out of her house the night before. At the moment, she was tied and gagged, the first time she had been quiet for more than a minute or two. For a gal who was married to a rich businessman from back east, she could cuss like a Texas cowboy who'd been following a trail herd and eating dust all the way to Kansas. Laswell knew that for a fact, because he had been a cowboy just like that years earlier as a kid, before he'd decided that following the Owl Hoot Trail was more to his liking. It was dangerous to get too close to her, too. Clem Baggett had made that mistake. Mrs. Browning had gotten her teeth fastened on his left ear and damn near ripped it off his head before Carlson pulled her away from him. Carlson had taken advantage of the opportunity to run his hands over her breasts, and she had repaid him by twisting around and kicking him in the balls. Howling in pain, Carlson had backhanded her and knocked her a good 10 feet. When Abel Dean and Spence Hooper rushed over to grab her and keep her from getting away, she'd hauled off and punched Spence in the face hard enough to break his nose. Gant and White Rock had had to pile on as well to bring her under control. And that was just getting her out of the house and onto the horse. By the time they were able to ride away from there, Laswell had gotten pretty worried that the law would show up. That didn't happen, though, and he started to think that maybe nobody had heard that shot after all. Their camp was at the foot of the bluff that loomed over the Black Rock Canyon. Finding the place in the dark was difficult, but Laswell had been over the ground enough in the past few days so that he was able to do it. Once they got there, he had told Mrs. Browning that they would leave her legs untied and not gag her if she would promise to behave. Not only had she not made that promise, she had told him to go to hell and then do something physically impossible once he got there. Laswell had never run into a woman quite like her. Her hair had come loose from its upswept curls and hung in disarray around her face. Her eyes burned with anger and hatred, and Laswell knew by looking at her that if she had been loose and had a gun in her hand, he'd be a dead man by now. They'd all be dead if she had her way. If he had been 30 years younger, he thought, he could come damn near falling in love with a woman like Rebel Browning. Sure made him sorry about what was going to happen. But he had his orders, and he intended to carry them out. Otherwise, he might not get paid. A man didn't have to be young to be in love with money. All day long she'd carried on, tied hand and foot and lying under a pine tree. Laswell had finally gotten fed up and told a couple of men to gag her. Rattigan had almost lost a finger trying to follow that order. Moss came over to Laswell.
Duncan just died.
Damn. Ray was a good man. He hung on longer than I expected him to, really.
If he was a good man, he wouldn't have let a girl shoot him.
I rode with him for a long while. You didn't. I reckon I know how good he was. Anyway, that ain't no regular gal. She's a hellcat if ever I saw one.
Carlson's getting some of the boys stirred up. He wants to have a go at her, and the others think they ought to have a turn, too.
Do they? I never said anybody could do that.
You never said they couldn't, either.
Moss had a point, but Moss didn't know the rest of the plan. Nobody did except Laswell. He was the only one who had actually talked to the boss. The orders he had were very specific, and they didn't include molesting Mrs. Browning. But he had allowed the other men to believe they might get a chance to have some fun with their captive, thinking that that might make them more inclined to go along with what he wanted. He saw now that might have been a mistake.
All right. I reckon we'd better clear the air.
The sun was low enough in the sky so that thick shadows were gathering under the trees. Laswell strode through them to the center of the camp.
Everybody gather around now. I got something to say.
The men formed a rough circle around him. Laswell looked at them and thumbed his hat back on his head. Then he lowered his hand and he hooked his thumb behind his gun belt so that his fingers hung near the butt of his Colt.
There's been some complaining around the camp because you fellas ain't had a chance to get more, how shall I put this, friendly-like with Mrs. Browning.
Damn straight.
Well, I'm here to tell you it ain't gonna happen.
The men stared at him in surprise. Some of them, like Rattigan, didn't seem to care all that much. Others, like Titus Gant and the Winchell brothers, looked mad.
What the hell are you talking about? She's right there. She can't do a damn thing to stop us. Why can't we take turns with her?
Because I say you can't. I'm the boss of this outfit, and what I say goes.
Is it because you want her for yourself?
That ain't it. We took Mrs. Browning for the ransom money, and that's all I'm thinking about.
Oh, her husband won't know that he's not getting her back in exactly the same condition as he saw her last until after he's paid the money.
Yeah? Well, what if he won't hand over the loot until he's talked to her, huh? If she tells him that you fellas molested her, he might not pay.
That's loco! He won't be calling the shots. If he tries anything like that, we'll just kill them both and take the money anyway.
Not if he's hidden it somewhere. I am telling you, we gotta be careful and cover all our bets.
Gant brushed his coat back.
And I'm telling you, I intend to have that woman before we give her back to her husband.
Laswell read the challenge on Gant's face and in the gambler's stance, and he knew that he couldn't let it go unanswered. The bullet drove Gant back a couple of steps as it impacted his chest. Gant crashed to the ground. Laswell stood there, apparently as casual as he had been a couple of heartbeats earlier, when Gant was still alive. Smoke curled from the barrel of the gun in his hand.
Let's make this simple. None of you are gonna bother Mrs. Browning, because I say you ain't. Is that plain enough for you?
Nobody argued, not even Carlson. The gathering broke up, the men drifting away to see to their horses, or roll a smoke, or get a card game going.
Jeff, Hank, grab some shovels and start digging.
They had both Gant and Ray Duncan to bury. Moss came over to Laswell, who had replaced the spent shell and pouched his iron.
I remember you now. You were part of that big feud in Texas about 25 years ago. Seems like I recall hearing something about a shootout in a saloon in Comanche. A fella named Laswell downed four of the other bunch, even though he had a couple of slugs in him.
I'm still carrying around one of those slugs, and it hurts like the dickens whenever it's about to rain.
Hell, man, you're a gunfighter!
Not to speak of. Not when there are men like Frank Morgan still alive. That's why I wouldn't go into this job with just me and the boys who'd been riding with me. Just the chance that we might have to go up against Morgan is enough to make me mighty careful.
Well, I reckon you won't have to worry about any of them coming at you head on. After seeing that draw, they won't want to do that. Gant was a pretty slick gun thrower, and he didn't even clear leather. All you have to do is watch out behind you.
I always do.
After night had fallen, after what had been the longest day in his life, without a doubt, Conrad went out to the carriage house and hitched the big buckskin horse to the buggy. The animal was more than just a buggy horse. Conrad had used him as a saddle mount before and knew the buckskin had plenty of speed and stamina. He stowed his saddle in the back of the buggy, along with the Winchester and the shotgun and the coiled shell belt. He hoped he wouldn't need any of those things. He hoped that he would turn the money over to the kidnappers and that they would give him Rebel in return. But if it didn't work out that way, he was going after them. He would kill anyone who got in his way until his wife was safe again. It would take about 2 hours to reach Black Rock Canyon, Conrad estimated. He drove out of Carson City a quarter of an hour before 10 o'clock to give himself plenty of time. The carpet bag with the $50,000 in it was at his feet. On his way out of town, he had stopped at the Western Union office to see if there were any more messages from Claudius Turnbuckle concerning Frank Morgan. But of course there weren't. Conrad had known there wouldn't be, but he had checked just to make sure. The kidnappers had picked a good night for their evil purposes. The moon was only a thin sliver of silver in the sky, so the night was at its darkest, lit mostly by the millions of stars. They wouldn't do much good in Black Rock Canyon. Conrad's thoughts were a confused, frightened jumble in his head. Most of the fright was for Rebel safety, of course, but he knew he was nervous about how he would handle himself tonight as well. Danger had tested him in the past, and he'd always come through, but that was no guarantee he would again. He had big footsteps to follow, the footsteps of Frank Morgan.
That's loco, Conrad. Follow your own trail, not mine, and don't walk in fear. You'll be all right. You'll do just fine. Do your best, and don't back down.
Conrad took comfort from the words. A flesh and blood Frank Morgan would have been better, but right now he would take what he could get. He was able to find the trail to Black Rock Canyon without much difficulty, although a time or two he worried that he had taken a wrong turn. Eventually, though, he spotted the huge rock formation that loomed above the canyon, and he knew he was in the right place. The bluff towered 80 or 100 feet above the canyon floor and formed a patch of even deeper darkness because it blotted out some of the stars. Conrad saw it above the tops of the pine trees that bordered the trail. He didn't know when or how the kidnappers would stop him and demand the ransom, but he assumed they would whenever they were good and ready. He didn't bother taking out his watch to check the time. He would have had to strike a match in order to see it, and he didn't want to do that. Every muscle in his body was taut with tension. His heart pounded, causing the blood to pulse in a frantic drumbeat inside his head. He had trouble catching his breath. He imagined this must be what it felt like to be drowning.
That's far enough, Browning!
Conrad hauled back hard on the reins. He was glad the kidnappers were confronting him at last. Anything was better than just driving slowly along in the buggy and waiting for them to show themselves. What happened next surprised him. Several torches blazed into life along both sides of the trail. The harsh light from them washed over the buggy so that Conrad couldn't make a move without the kidnappers being able to see what he was doing. They were smart. They didn't trust him any more than he trusted them. A man stepped out into the middle of the trail in front of the buggy. Conrad half expected to see the ginger-bearded man, but this fellow was one he'd never seen before. He was tall and burly, with a deeply tanned, rough-hewn face.
Are you alone, Browning?
Your note said for me to come alone. I'm cooperating. I want my wife back.
Ah, you'll get her if you do as you're told. If you don't...
The man waved a hand toward the trees alongside the trail.
There are a dozen rifles trained on you right now. You try any tricks, and you'll wind up ventilated.
Conrad looked toward the trees. Enough light from the torches penetrated into the shadows underneath them for him to be able to see the barrels of those rifles the kidnapper had mentioned. He also caught glimpses of some of the men holding the weapons. He recognized several of them from the previous encounter, including a huge moon-faced man who was so big he stuck out from both sides of the tree trunk he was using for cover, a bearded Mexican with a steeple-crowned sombrero, and an older, ugly man in a black vest and with black sleeve cuffs. Conrad stared at them over the barrels of their rifles and committed each face to memory in turn. He would never forget any of them. Their images would be burned into his brain until the day he died. Which might be today, he reminded himself. He was badly outnumbered, if it came down to a fight.
You should hope your men are good shots.
Why the hell do you say that?
Conrad nodded to the right of the trail, then the left.
We've got 6 men on each side of the trail. If they shoot at me and miss, they're liable to hit some of the men on the other side.
Never you mind about that. You got the money?
Do you have my wife?
Oh, we got her all right. Don't you worry about that.
Let me see her.
Conrad supposed that Rebel was somewhere back in the trees, with at least one of the kidnappers guarding her. Instead, the kidnapper's spokesman took him by surprise by pointing at the sky.
Look up.
For a terrible moment, Conrad thought the man was saying that Rebel was already dead and was pointing toward heaven. But then as he lifted his eyes, he saw another torch come to life. This was on top of the rocky bluff that overhung the canyon. Conrad saw 2 figures illuminated by the torch's glare. Rebel was one of them, standing perilously close to the bluff's edge. The other one, right behind her, was the bearded man Conrad had pegged as the leader of the kidnappers. He had hold of Rebel's arm with one hand. The other pressed the barrel of a revolver into her side.
Oh my God! Rebel! Rebel, can you hear me?
I hear you, Conrad! And I love you!
I love you too!
Oh, that's touching as all hell. Now let's see the money, Browning.
Conrad had to tear his eyes away from Rebel. It wasn't easy. He glared at the man.
You don't get the money until my wife is safely in this buggy with me.
You ain't giving the orders. Now here's how it's gonna work. You give us the money and then stay right where you are. We leave and our man leaves your wife up on top of that rock. Now there's a trail down. She can make it if she's careful. She climbed up there after all. And once we're gone with the money, she can climb down. The 2 of you can go back to Carson City. You never see us again. Sound good?
The part about never seeing you again does.
Of course, Conrad lied. He planned to see each and every one of them again, either at the end of a hangman's rope or over the barrel of a gun. But that would come later, after Rebel was safe.
All right, I'll turn over the money. But I want your men to pull back so that I don't have all those guns pointing at me. They make me nervous.
The man thought it over, then shrugged. He drew his Colt.
All right. You fellas heard the man. Back off, so it's just him and me. That all right with you, Browning?
Let's see them do it first.
One by one, the kidnappers stepped out from behind the trees and moved along the trail, withdrawing until they were about 50 yards behind their spokesman. That gave Conrad an even better look at their faces. He would know them when he saw them again, that was for sure.
Now, damn it! We done what you wanted. Now turn over the money or we'll just kill you both and take it.
Conrad knew he had to risk it. He bent over and reached down to pick up the carpet bag. And as he did so, he felt the pressure of the gun that was tucked into his trousers at the small of his back under his coat. He hefted the carpet bag and stood up in the buggy. Conrad tossed it over the buckskin horse's head. The bag landed in the trail, almost at the man's feet. He took an eager step forward and reached down to unfasten the catches on the bag. As he threw it open and saw the packets of bills inside, a grin creased his face.
You can count it if you want.
No, I don't reckon that'll be necessary. You played square with us, now we'll play square with you.
The man closed the bag, fastened it, and picked it up. He carried it over to where one of the torches was stuck upright in the dirt beside the trail. He wrenched the torch free and waved it over his head. Conrad supposed that that was the signal to the man on the bluff with Rebel that they had the money. Maybe now they would let her go, he thought. No tricks, he prayed. Please, please, no tricks.
Hey, Browning!
Conrad's head jerked back as he gazed upward. He hoped to see the man let go of Rebel and retreat, but that didn't happen. Instead, as the man stepped behind her,
what happens now is on your head. Welcome to hell!
No! Rebel!
Conrad couldn't believe his horror-stricken eyes as he saw Rebel stumble back into empty air and then plummet toward the base of the bluff so far below. Even though it took only the blink of an eye for her to disappear into the trees, the fall seemed to last an eternity. Instinct sent Conrad's hand flashing to the gun at the small of his back. He whipped it out and tilted the barrel upward at the man who had just shot Rebel. The bastard was already gone, though, having leapt back out of Conrad's line of fire. He jerked his eyes back down and saw that the man in the trail was still standing there, apparently dumbfounded by what had just happened. Evidently, it had taken him by surprise just as much as it had Conrad. But he recovered quickly from the shot and clawed at the gun on his hip. Conrad grabbed the reins. The buckskin leaped forward. The kidnapper had to leap to one side to avoid being trampled by the big horse. He couldn't get out of the way of the buggy, though. The vehicle clipped him and sent him spinning off his feet. Standing in the buggy, holding the reins with one hand and the colt with the other, Conrad sent the buggy racing toward the rest of the kidnappers. He emptied the revolver as he charged them, and between the flying lead and the racing horse and buggy, the men were forced to scatter. They fired back at Conrad as they scurried out of the way. He didn't care if they killed him. He was sure that Rebel was dead. Shot at close range like that, followed by the fall off the bluff, there was no way she could have survived. So actually, they had already killed him. His heart might still beat, and his lungs might draw breath into them. But he was dead, right along with his beloved Rebel. He charged through the kidnappers and kept the buggy moving, not stopping until he'd gone a couple of hundred yards, well out of reach of the light from the torches that still blazed alongside the trail. Then he hauled the horse to a halt and leaped out of the buggy. He tore off his outer clothing, revealing the black garb that would be impossible to see in the shadows. Moving swiftly and efficiently, he reached behind the seat, picked up the gun belt, and strapped it on. The holster already held a loaded Colt. The black Stetson was next, tugged down on his sandy hair. Then he retrieved the Winchester and the shotgun and loped off into the darkness, carrying one in each hand. Shots roared, but the kidnappers had to be firing blindly because they couldn't see him in the shadows as he circled back toward them.
Hold your fire! Hold your fire, dammit! Forget Brown and leave him alive! Just get that money!
They had all charged after him, determined to kill him, and had forgotten momentarily about the ransom. Conrad hadn't forgotten, though. That money was the bait that would bring them to him so that he could kill them. He reached the trail and dashed out into the light. The carpet bag still lay there, close to the man he'd run over with the buggy. That man had pulled himself to the edge of the trail, dragging what appeared to be two broken legs behind him.
He's here! Son of a bitch is here! He's after the money!
Men came running from the other direction, but they were too late. Conrad whirled and dropped to a knee, aiming the shotgun at the approaching men. Conrad heard yells of pain, but didn't know how many of them he'd hit or how badly they were wounded. He dropped the scattergun, snatched the rifle and the carpet bag from the trail, and darted past one of the torches into the trees again.
Get that money, but don't kill Browning!
That was strange, Conrad thought. Why did the man want his life spared? So that he could be tormented that much longer by the knowledge that he had failed his wife? That she was dead because of him? Before he could ponder that any further, a crackling in the brush near at hand warned him. One of the kidnappers burst from behind a tree and tackled him. Conrad went down hard, but he managed to hang on to both the carpet bag and the Winchester.
I got him! Over here, I got him!
Conrad swung the carpet bag and smashed it against the man's head. The kidnapper fell off him and sprawled to the side. Conrad lurched to his feet and pressed the Winchester's barrel to the man's head.
Help! He's gonna...
Conrad pulled the trigger. This man had helped murder Edwin Sinclair, had helped kidnap Rebel. He was partially responsible for her being dead. There was no mercy in Conrad at this moment. Barely anything human remained inside him. He took no pleasure in blowing this bastard's brains out. It was just something that had to be done.
He's over there!
The sound of the shot set them off again, despite their leader's orders. Conrad crouched and ran, trusting to luck or fate to keep him safe, at least until he could kill the rest of them. After that, he didn't care what happened to him. Something slammed into him and knocked him off his feet. The carpet bag's handle slipped out of his hand as he fell.
I got him!
A burning pain in his side sent waves of weakness through him. He got a hand under him and pushed himself to his knees. He felt around for the carpet bag but couldn't find it. Conrad could hear the attackers getting closer by the second. He had no doubt they would tear him apart if they ever got their hands on him. The wound in his side had put him at a disadvantage. He felt his strength deserting him, And since he no longer had the money, he couldn't use it to lure them on and kill them at times and places of his choosing. They outnumbered him by too much. He had to admit it. He couldn't kill them all tonight. So he had to get away. Sooner or later, they would die at his hand. But in order for that to happen, he had to live. That knowledge burned through him with a fiercer heat than the bullet that had gouged his side. The need for revenge that filled him could only be satisfied if he survived this night of blood and death. He forced himself to his feet and stumbled through the trees.
Hey! It's the money! Hot damn! I found the money!
Let's get out of here!
That was the ginger-bearded man again, the one who had shot Rebel. It was all Conrad could do not to lift the Winchester and spray the remaining rounds in the direction of that voice as fast as he could work the rifle's lever. But he couldn't hope to kill all of them, and even though the bearded man was the one who'd pulled the trigger, they had all played a part in Rebel's death. He wouldn't be satisfied until all of them were dead.
What about Hank? He killed Hank!
Sorry, there ain't nothing we can do about it now. My orders were to leave Browning alive.
There it was again. Conrad huddled against a tree trunk and wondered who could have given such orders. He had seen the reaction of the man in the trail when the bearded man shot Rebel. He hadn't known that was going to happen, and Conrad thought that the rest of the kidnappers hadn't either. They had expected to collect the ransom and turn Rebel back over to him. That meant the bearded man had been playing a different game, a game of his own. And only he had the answers that Conrad needed. A few minutes later, Conrad heard hoofbeats in the night. They were leaving, taking the money and riding away from the place where Rebel had died. Where a huge hole had been ripped out of Conrad's heart. No one could live with damage like that. I'm dead, he thought again. Conrad Browning is dead. He blinked and looked through the trees, thinking that he might catch a glimpse of the torches if they still burned, but nothing met his eyes except darkness. The canyon was quiet now. The place was far enough from town, isolated enough, that no one would have heard the shots. No one was going to come and help him. He shouldn't have tried to handle this alone, he thought. He should have asked for help, from the law or the Pinkertons or someone. But time had been short, and he had honestly believed that he stood the best chance of saving Rebel by following his instincts.
Rebel.
His instincts had betrayed him, and Rebel was dead. He was no Frank Morgan, that was for damned sure. Frank wouldn't have let this happen. Frank would have found a way to save her, to save Rebel, and kill all the bastards who had kidnapped her. Conrad sat there, stewing in self-loathing for long moments, before he finally braced his back against the tree trunk and began struggling to his feet. The least he could do was to find Rebel and take her body back to town so that she could have a proper burial. He owed her that much, after failing her so spectacularly. The pain in his side had faded to a dull ache. He placed his hand against his shirt and felt the blood that had soaked into it. He couldn't tell how badly he was hurt, but he could walk, so he hoped the wound wasn't too bad. Eventually, he stumbled onto the trail. A moment later, he was rewarded by the sound of hoofbeats moving toward him. The buckskin brought the buggy to him. Conrad caught hold of the horse's halter and leaned against him. Conrad found the suit coat he had tossed behind the seat and dug out a box of matches from one of the pockets. He made a torch of his own, ripping the lining out of the coat and wrapping it around a branch he found. Then, holding the torch above his head, he stumbled toward the spot where he thought Rebel's body had fallen. His head was spinning by now, and he couldn't be sure he was going in the right direction. But he would search all night if he had to. His instincts were true this time.
Rebel.
He found her, only minutes later, lying in a huddled heap between two trees. Her body was broken from the fall, and her white blouse was dark with blood from the gunshot wound. Conrad fell to his knees beside her and jabbed the torch into the ground so that it would stand up as he gathered her into his arms. She was limp, lifeless. He cradled her against his chest and searched in vain for a pulse, a breath, even the faintest sign of life. But of course, There was none. Rebel was gone. And her last words, he realized, had been to tell him that she loved him.
I love you too.
That horrible, bittersweet thought was in his mind as he held her. Then, suddenly, he felt the cold ring of a gun muzzle press against the back of his neck. Conrad stiffened.
Don't move, Browning. I figured you'd come back for that bitch. That was my brother you killed back yonder. My twin brother. Shot him like he was no better than a damn dog. You know what that feels like?
I'm holding my wife's dead body in my arms. And men like you and your brother killed my mother. So yeah, I know what it feels like.
The response seemed to throw the kidnapper for a loop. He must have expected Conrad to beg for his life. It would be a cold day in hell before that happened, even though Conrad wanted desperately to live now, so that he could have his revenge on Rebel's murderers. Even as he spoke, he was moving one hand carefully toward the makeshift torch stuck in the ground beside him. His fingers touched the branch. He pushed on it, gently and slowly, so the kidnapper wouldn't notice what he was doing.
Well, now you're gonna find out what it feels like to get your brains blown out, just like my brother.
Before the man could pull the trigger, the torch tipped over, falling straight at his legs. The flames coming at him caused him to jump back instinctively, and even though he jerked the trigger of his gun, Conrad had already rolled to the side, taking Rebel's body with him. The gun still blasted painfully close to Conrad's ear, but the bullet thudded harmlessly into the ground. Conrad wound up lying on his back, with the kidnapper looming above him. He brought his right leg up and buried the toe of his boot in the man's groin. The man fell heavily and curled up into a ball as he clutched at his injured privates. Conrad came up on his knees and pulled his Colt, then swung it butt forward. The gun barrel hit against the man's head, and he straightened out, unconscious. A sudden glare caught Conrad's attention as he knelt there. He looked around and saw that the carpet of dry needles on the ground had caught fire where he'd shoved the torch over. A fire like that would spread quickly in these woods, and for a second, he thought about leaving the kidnapper there to roast alive. Something inside him wouldn't allow him to do that. He had thought that all vestiges of his humanity had died with Rebel, but maybe that wasn't completely the case. He pushed himself to his feet, hurried over, and stomped out the flames before they could spread. That plunged the canyon into darkness again. Conrad tried to ignore the pain of his bullet wound as he knelt next to the unconscious kidnapper once more and used the man's own belt to lash his hands together behind his back. He didn't want the fellow going anywhere just yet. Conrad realized that he might be able to make use of him. Then, using matches to light his path, he made his way back to the buggy and retrieved a blanket from the area behind the seat, the same blanket he had spread out on that hillside so they could sit on it to enjoy their picnic. Another shred of his soul peeled away. He had never carried it back into the house. Now he took it into the woods and gently wrapped Rebel's body in it. Once he had placed her in the buggy, he went back for the kidnapper.
Go!
Conrad hit him again with the gun to keep him still. He took hold of the man's feet and dragged him through the woods, back to the trail where the horse and buggy waited. He didn't worry about how scratched up the bastard got along the way, either. Conrad knew he had lost quite a bit of blood. He could feel the insidious weakness creeping through him. With a lot of effort, he lifted the unconscious man and toppled him onto the buggy's floorboard in front of the driver's seat. Conrad would have to ride back to Carson City with his feet resting on the man. It would be uncomfortable, but there was no way he was putting the kidnapper in the back of the vehicle with Rebel. Conrad never remembered all the details of the drive back to town. By that time, he was functioning largely on instinct and sheer determination. He recalled that a time or two, the kidnapper started to move around a little, and each time, Conrad kicked him in the head. In the back of his mind, he hoped the man wouldn't die from the punishment before they got back to town. The kidnapper knew things that he needed to know. Conrad intended to have answers. The moon was down by the time the buggy reached Carson City. The darkest hour of the night lay over the town. No one was in the streets, and there was no one to challenge Conrad or even see him as he drove around the house and into the carriage house. The kidnapper was still breathing, but hadn't budged for a while. Conrad hauled the man out of the buggy and stood him up against one of the posts that supported the roof, tying him in place with some rope that was in the carriage house. Then he lifted Rebel and carried her into the home they had shared for all too short a time. Just having her in his arms seemed to give him strength, despite the wound in his side. He took her upstairs and placed her on their bed, still wrapped in the blanket. Then he went back downstairs and out to the carriage house, reeling like a drunken man as he did so. He paused just outside the carriage house and leaned against the wall for a moment in an attempt to regain some of his strength. It didn't really help. He heard thumping from inside the building. The kidnapper was regaining consciousness again. This time, Conrad didn't intend to knock him out. Not until he had the answers he wanted. He drew his gun and shoved the door open. Then healed it closed behind him as he went in. He had left a lantern burning, and in its flickering light, he saw the kidnapper looking around wildly. Conrad forced his stride to be steady as he walked toward the man. He lifted the gun as he advanced, and the kidnapper grew wide-eyed as he stared down the barrel of the Colt. Conrad stopped in front of the man.
What's your name?
It's Winchell. Jeff Winchell. What'd you do to me? My head feels like it's about to fall plumb off.
You're lucky you've still got a head. What was your brother's name?
It was Hank. Hank Winchell, you murdering son of a bitch.
You know, you're a fine one to talk. After the way you killed my wife...
I didn't have anything to do with that. I swear it, mister. That was all Laswell's doing. As far as any of the rest of us knew, we were going to let her go as soon as we had that ransom money.
Laswell?
Clay Laswell. Some old Texas gunfighter. He was the ramrod of the bunch. He's the one who wired Moss and had him get together some men.
Conrad nodded as he made a mental note of the man. So, the ginger-bearded man was Clay Laswell, and he was the leader of the kidnappers, just as Conrad had supposed. Winchell's frightened words confirmed Conrad's earlier speculation that Laswell had crossed up his own men by shooting Rebel. He didn't let any of that show on his face, though.
Who's Moss?
Vernon Moss. He's the one who was waiting in the trail for you. You broke both his legs when you run him over that buggy, you know.
Good. He had it coming. What about the others? What are their names?
Yeah, I know what you're doing. You're trying to get me to sell out my parts. Well, I won't do it, damn you. I won't.
I think you will. If you won't tell me what I need to know, then you're no good to me.
Winchell stared at him. The kidnapper's face paled, and beads of sweat popped out on his forehead.
You can't kill me. You're a businessman. You own banks and mines and railroads. You don't go around shooting people.
You know who my father is, don't you? What do you think Frank Morgan would do if he were here right now? Do you think he'd hesitate to pull this trigger?
Actually, at this very moment, Conrad figured that he was closer to being able to commit cold-blooded murder than Frank would have been, although exterminating this vermin hardly qualified as murder. Winchell twisted his head to the side and closed his eyes.
Don't shoot me! Please, don't shoot! I'll tell you what you want to know.
Everything. I want to know everything.
Winchell looked at him again.
You gotta understand, I don't know all of it. Laswell's the only one who did. He was the only one who talked to whoever the boss was.
Laswell didn't come up with the idea of kidnapping my wife?
I don't think so. I think he was just a hired hand like the rest of us. Only he knew who was really pulling the strings.
Keep talking.
Winchell did, details spilling from him, although the kidnapper really didn't know much beyond the things Conrad had already deduced for himself. He knew the names of all the other men involved, though, and Conrad was careful to memorize each one of them. In some cases, he had only one name, Buck, Carlson, and Rattigan. But that was better than nothing.
The only other hombre I'm sure was in on it was that dude.
What dude?
The one who was supposed to let us in the house after he knocked you out.
Edwin Sinclair?
I never heard his name. All I know is that he worked for you. And Laswell had Julio cut his throat once we had your wife.
A chill washed through Conrad. So Sinclair hadn't been trustworthy after all. He had plotted with the kidnappers and had been done in by the treachery of his own allies. He hadn't been killed trying to save Rebel. Conrad wished briefly that the kidnappers hadn't killed Sinclair. He would have liked to have done that himself. But that part was finished. He looked over the Colt's barrel at Winchell.
You're certain that's all you know?
That's it, Browning. Well, except...
Go on.
I don't know if it makes any difference or not, but nobody laid a finger on your wife except to bring her with us. She wasn't, molested or anything like that. I give you my word on that.
Why should I accept your word?
Because I'm trying to convince you not to shoot me. Some of the fellas wanted to, well, you know, but Laswell wouldn't let them. He made it clear that we was to leave Mrs. Browning alone. I reckon that must have been part of his orders, too.
Conrad couldn't see the logic in that. But as a matter of fact, he did believe Winchell. The man was too frightened not to be telling the truth. And even though the knowledge that Rebel hadn't been assaulted was scant comfort at a time like this, it was better than nothing. At least she hadn't spent her final hours in terror and pain being brutalized.
I told you everything I know. I swear, Browning. What are you gonna do now?
Conrad's lips drew back from his teeth in a grimace as he stared at the kidnapper.
I know what I ought to do. What I want to do.
Conrad tilted the Colt's barrel up and let down the hammer. He lowered the gun and slid it into its holster. Winchell sagged forward against the rope.
I'm not going to kill you. I'm going to turn you over to the police and let the law deal with you. You'll probably hang anyway, but I'm not going to be your executioner.
I'm much obliged. I'm mighty sorry about what happened to your missus. I really am, Browning. I never wanted to hurt nobody. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Shut up!
Conrad turned away. His right arm was limp from holding up the gun as he interrogated Winchell, and his head was still spinning. He knew he needed medical attention, but not yet. First, he had to find someone to summon the police so they could arrest Winchell, and then he had to deal with making the arrangements for Rebel's funeral. He was stumbling toward the buggy when the buckskin horse suddenly threw his head up in alarm. Conrad started to turn, but before he could... Conrad went down hard, and Winchell landed on top of him. The belt Conrad had used to tie the man's wrist looped around his neck, and Conrad barely got a hand up in time to keep the belt from closing tightly on his neck. His fingers gave him a little room to breathe, but Winchell planted a knee in the small of his back, cutting off Conrad's air. The wound in his side had stopped bleeding earlier, but now he felt the hot, wet flow once again.
Oh, threaten me, will you? Kill my brother! Shove a gun in my face! Lord over me! You'll pay for that, you son of a bitch!
Conrad had no idea how the man had gotten loose, and it didn't matter. The only important thing at the moment was that Winchell was on the brink of strangling him to death. Conrad fought back desperately, driving the elbow of his free arm behind him into Winchell's belly. That bought him a little respite. Conrad shoved hard with his knees and arched up off the floor. Winchell toppled off him, and the belt around Conrad's neck came loose. Winchell came at him, flailing punches. Conrad lowered his head and bowled forward, tackling Winchell. They rolled across the floor, winding up almost under the buggy horse. The animal danced away skittishly as Conrad grappled with the kidnapper. Hatred mixed with desperation allowed him to find the last bits of strength remaining in his body. And he grabbed Winchell's shirt and heaved the man against one of the buggy wheels. Winchell's feet slipped out from under him and he went down. Conrad reached up and slapped the horse's rump. The buckskin leaped forward, and since he was still hitched to the buggy, the vehicle lurched ahead as well. The iron-tired wheel rolled right over Winchell's throat. Conrad had looked away as the wheel crushed the man's throat. The horse backed up, but the damage was done. For the second time tonight, Conrad had used the buggy as a weapon, and this time it had been lethal. He reached up, caught hold of the buckskin's harness, and pulled himself to his feet. Winchell had choked to death, he thought as he looked down at the body, but not at the end of a rope. Conrad didn't care. One more of the kidnappers was dead. That was all that mattered. And as he gazed at the corpse, an idea began to form in his mind, an offshoot of things that had happened earlier. The remaining kidnappers might worry that he would come after them and try to avenge his wife, but they wouldn't think that if they believed he was dead. In fact, they might even let their guard down a little if they thought he was no longer a threat. For the first time since this terrible night began, a smile touched Conrad's lips. An agonized, haunted smile, to be sure. But still. He pulled Winchell's body clear of the buggy, and then unhitched the horse and turned it into its stall. He picked up the rope he had used to tie Winchell to the post and saw that it was badly frayed. Running his fingers over the back of the post, Conrad found the rough spot where Winchell must have worked the rope back and forth until it parted. Even before that, he had worked his hands free from the belt. That had been going on all the time he was questioning the man, and he hadn't even noticed because he was so lightheaded from loss of blood and had been concentrating on what Winchell was telling him. Weaving, Conrad walked back into the house and went to his study. He barely had the strength to pull out some paper and a pen, and the letters he scratched onto the paper wavered and blurred. That was all right. He wanted people to think that he had written the letter in a state of great emotional distress. Actually, he was cold inside just then, numb to everything except the need for vengeance. Leaving the letter in the middle of his desk where someone was sure to find it, he went upstairs and stepped into the bedroom. He had to say goodbye to Rebel.
I promise you that they'll all pay for what they did. Each and every one of them.
He knew that if the situation were reversed, she would have devoted the rest of her life to hunting down his killers. He could do no less for her, and he knew she would understand.
I love you.
As Conrad turned away, he thought he heard a whisper saying the same thing, brushing across him like a warm breeze. Although not an overly religious man, Conrad prayed for strength to finish this as he went downstairs. He had a small supply of cash for emergencies in the desk. He stuffed the bills under his shirt, on the side that wasn't soaked with blood. He planned to take only one revolver and the Winchester with him, so he left the spare Colt on the desk, holding down the letter that explained how he couldn't go on living after what had happened to Rebel.